Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Welcome into the Illini Inquirer podcast. I am Jeremy Warner, Illini Inquirer publisher. And St. Patrick's Day for me always is kind of one of the most wonderful times of the year. The weather is getting a little bit more bearable around here in Illinois. But also, of course, the start of baseball season around the corner. I'm prepping for my fantasy baseball draft, which is my ridiculously nerd hobby that I love, and it's better than fantasy football. I will fight you about that. But especially Keeper League baseball. You got to get into that. But, of course, the NCAA tournament. It's always starting around St. Patrick's Day, and I had to be reminded today by our guest that the tournament is different this year. Friday, the day Illinois plays, is the first day of the NCAA tournament this year. Saturday also is the first round of the NCAA tournament, and then you follow that up with Sunday, Monday for the round of 32. So it's a little bit different this year, but we are going to talk some NCAA tournament on this podcast. Your favorite, one of your favorite guests, I know for sure, one of the best basketball breakdowns we get on the show, Michael Tulip, former Illini guard. He's going to have so many thoughts on what he saw in the Big Ten tournament, what he thinks about this team going to the NCAA tournament, and some things about a team from a player perspective that you can only get from somebody like Michael Tulip. So let's talk some March Madness and the number one seeded Illini coming up next on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's former Illini guard Mike Letuip. Mike, what a Sunday that was. Big Ten tournament championship followed quickly, just moments afterwards, with a number one seed. What was that like for you to watch?
I'm proud to be an Illinois graduate just as is. Win or lose, I'm always proud. But there was something about Sunday, man, that I felt a lot more pride than maybe I've ever felt in my time being an Illini, being associated with Illinois. It was really special to see these guys. I think anytime you see a group of guys that can set goals and go out there and achieve them, despite losing out on a regular season championship, despite injuries to your, according to USA Today, National Player of the Year, and just how they've been able to do it and how each guy's kind of found their identity and big guys stepping up in big moments, Andre Curbelo. I mean, you can go down the list, and it's amazing to think that out of all the accolades Kofi's gotten, he's probably still a little underappreciated, which is wild. And I think the cool part about this team is the fact that, and I've said it before, they're just so happy to see each other succeed. And I can say that, and people can say, oh, of course, they're teammates. Well, it's not always like that. You can go across a lot of different college basketball programs right now. And it's definitely not the case. And when you have a controlled environment, when you're in a bubble, when you can't see your parents, when you can't experience what it's like to win like this, in terms of, you know, an outsider's perspective where it's, hey, you know, I can walk around campus and people are chanting Andre Curbelo's name. And like those guys don't get any of that. And as much as you want to be focused on the task at hand, of course, like those things are cool. Mm-hmm. You know, those things are cool. And it's part of what makes the college experience what it is, but even just sharing it with your family and them not being able to do that. And I think what you're seeing is these teams, I think you saw a little bit with the Miami Heat in the bubble, you know, like culture wins in these type of scenarios. And when you can mix culture with a team that's, in my opinion, like a bona fide national champion contender, like this is the result that you get.
It's a good point that you almost are forced to get closer with these people because you have to spend all day with them. And that's a great analogy with the Miami Heat. And, you know, sometimes, you know, that first time we got the picture of those guys arm in arms on the flagrant at Michigan, I thought it was fantastic. And I thought it is. But like every time we've gotten that sense, I'm like, are we doing this too much? Are we overinflating right. this? Like, are right. we just taking this picture every time we see it? But I do think like, obviously, talent wins, coaching wins, but there does have to be that culture. It's a weighted word, right, Mike? But like you've been a part of locker rooms like that. What do you think makes this one different outside of talent and coaching?
Well, I think you hit on it. You touched on a point there that I want to make a distinction for. So let's say you know you have this controlled environment bubble scenario, and I think the natural thing is, you know, you're forced to grow closer. That could go one of two ways. Right. You may have guys on the team that the more you are around them or, you know, maybe you're not hanging out with them as much as you were in a non-controlled environment. Now you are. Now you're like, I just, you know, we don't mesh. I don't like this guy. You know, he's in it for himself. Like all that stuff is the closer you get to each other, the more of those types of things that you realize. And I think, but like I said, it's a top-down thing when it comes to what this team values. And when you can have your National Player of the Year candidate and recipient be the guy that is at the forefront of what culture means to him. And not only that, because I've seen, you know, you see plenty of players. There are things that Io says that you're like, yeah, you know, you hear that from good players from time to time, but it's a whole nother thing to walk it instead of just talking. We've seen time and time again with this dude, man, like he's about what he says. And there's not a phony bone in his body. And I think guys really feed off of that. I think there's certain guys on this team that, you know, I look at a guy like Coleman Hawkins, his decline in playing time is kind of coincided. And I'm not saying that the team got better because Coleman Hawkins isn't playing, mm-hmm. but there are those moments where people tend to look out for themselves. Like it's natural, it's inherent. And I've watched him on the bench in games that he hasn't played in over the last, you know, few games. And he's right up there with everybody, cheering, swinging his towel around, flexing on the sideline. Like that says a lot. I think that's the telltale sign. When you look at a culture, everybody always looks at, what's the best player doing, right? Like mm-hmm. what's Kofi doing? What's Andre Curbelo doing? I'm a little bit different. I think what those guys do holds a ton of weight, but I'm looking at the ninth, 10th, 11th guy. And if, you know, cause those are the guys that typically are not playing and may think that they should. And if you can have those guys just as much on board and pushing for the cause, you don't have this locker room that is kind of cannibalizing itself where it's like, I'm unhappy with that. I'm not playing. So I'm going to project that onto the guy next to me who I think I can suck in because he's not getting as many shots as he wants. And it becomes this kind of an infectious spread throughout yeah. the locker room, and it can tarnish a locker room pretty easily. And that's what's been so cool about this team is, man, like, you know, you hear it from Underwood, and then clearly the players have picked up on it, and that has become their mentality. And I've said it before, like, that's how you sustain success in, you know, not just, hey, 2021 season, that was a fun one, right? No, it's, hey, let's 21-22. Like, we have the foundation. We know what worked. Andre Curbelo and these guys are seeing that firsthand. Like, why wouldn't I want to be like Io and the way that he carries himself and leads? Like, I saw what that did for us. That brought us a Big Ten championship. So I'm going to go out and do that again next year. So
yeah, two other examples of that, Mike, I wanted to bring up as you're on that point, so I don't forget, is, I mean, Georgie. Georgie, what he's given up for Kofi to shine, but then to have that moment where he dominates a game, a Big Ten championship game, for a 4-minute stretch that they don't win without it. Trent Frazier sacrificing a lot for Io to come in and saying, hey, yeah, Io, I want you here. I'm okay with you here. I want to win. You know, there's obviously probably some, you know, adjustment for all those guys, and I think we've seen that in previous seasons, but now they're all bought into it because they see, hey, Kofi makes us better and that elevates me. Io makes us better, that elevates me. So I think those guys are other, you know, and then Demonte, man, stepping up and making a runner like he did late in regulation. The confidence he got, I think, when Io was out was unbelievable. But though, I think Trent and, you know, Georgie are perfect examples of kind of guys who have kind of, you know, moved aside a little bit for the betterment of the team. And I think it's genuine. I don't see those guys griping very much.
You make a great point, and I'm going to try to connect this to me personally, because I realized this when I played in college. So when I came in as a freshman, there was an open scholarship. I came in as a preferred walk-on, and every single practice, that's all I cared about. I just wanted that scholarship. And when you do that, you become a roller coaster. You think every turnover that you just made just lost your scholarship. You think every three that you hit, loose ball you just dove on, just got you the scholarship. Hmm. And when you play that, when you ride that wave and you keep making it about yourself, which I did, it's amazing when you start making it about others and making it truly about your teammates, all of that stuff comes back to you. And what happened was my junior year, you know, pretty early on in my junior year, I was like, you know what? Or really, it was late sophomore year. I was like, you know what? Forget, you know, what I think in my mind should happen. Get a scholarship, not get a scholarship, more playing time, less playing time. I'm going to go to practice every day. I'm going to continue to be about the guys. Who can I help? Be a good teammate. Whatever's asked of me, I'm going to do. And I'm telling you, when Gross offered me that scholarship, I was blindsided.
Really?
It all ends up just coming back to you. And that's what Georgie and Trent have done. Because in those moments, you get rewarded. Like, Georgie and Trent take a step back. And in the Big Ten championship, Georgie has like his own 10-point run. And Trent hits the floater in the corner three to put them up five in a big moment. Like, that is, those are massive, massive plays and stretches and games. And I think it speaks to this team and Demonte, even just his first half threes. And, you know, he had another one in the second half. And I think, you know, that's the sign of a really good team is you don't need Io for 40 minutes. You don't need Kofi for 40 minutes. They're going to do what they do. But the 6 minutes of Georgie and the, you know, and I'm not saying you only have 5 minutes of Trent, because he does it all on the defensive end, but all of these guys have their moments of helping this team quite literally get through a stretch. Kofi's going to the bench, Georgie pulls his weight, Io subs out, Trent pulls his weight, and I can't stress that enough how important that is, not only just for winning a Big Ten championship, but as you get into the tournament. Like, you're going to have, you know, round of 32 games where, yeah, maybe it's not a great game for Io. But, and then we look back on it, we're like, man, that was the Jacob Granison game. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes 3 for 5 from three and has 14 points and a couple key offensive rebounds. And that's how you get through all these different games. Was Dante DiVincenzo the best player on Villanova his, you know, that year they won the national championship? Probably not, but he stepped up in the national championship game, and that's just what you have with these guys, and they're all fearless. Mm-hmm. Like they all want that moment. I think it's easier said than done. You have a crowd in there now, and the crowd kind of gets you like more psychoanalyzing yourself. How do I look? What am I doing? I don't want to. And they just ran with it. And it's, yeah, it's easier when you have the pro Illini crowd, but Indiana was getting booed.
Right.
So, you know, it's good to have your own crowd if you're doing really well. And if you're not doing well, it's, you know, you kind of feel front and center for whatever's probably in your Twitter mentions. So it's, I'm so impressed with these guys and the way that they've just tackled all of this head on.
I thought you guys never read your Twitter mentions.
You'd be surprised.
How hard is that? How hard is that as a player? Because some people like respond to me or something, and it's like, I try just to block it out myself just because there's so much negativity in there. Can you give me any stories or anything like that of mentions? Because I don't know if people actually know, like, you guys read that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like, to think that you're just firing off a tweet at a player and it's just, you know, because this is how I always look at it. Whoever sends that tweet is in the middle of cooking dinner, sends it, and then just puts their phone down, goes on with their day. But for someone that's on the receiving end of it, I saw it, man. I had teammates, even myself. Like, there's, you know, I had plenty of DMs when I was at Illinois of people that just wanted to play me one-on-one on campus because they just didn't, they thought that they were better than I was. They should have the spot that I had. And
did you ever do that? Because I would have loved to have watched you just take them to school.
What's in it for me? I mean, if you win, you're supposed to. If you lose, it's humiliating. There's no chance anyone on that campus that is DMing me would have beat me one-on-one.
Did you want to send them the offer list? Like go to verbal commits and send them the offer list?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like, dude, that was the misconception. Like for me, it was never, oh, my parents were Illinois grads. It's been a dream school. Like I came there because I want to play. Mm-hmm. But I had teammates that, you know, they read that stuff and if you're, you know, 18, 19, 20 years old, that stuff eats away at you because that's a prime time in your life where you're very, very conscious of what people think about you. And you haven't gotten into what your identity is as a whole yet. So everything that someone says about you, you start questioning whether or not to believe it. And I think, I remember specifically, I finally cracked the rotation. It was a Big Ten game. My junior year, we're playing Purdue. I've been told the four previous games that I was going to get in. This is the game. We need you here. Didn't play. So whatever, I'm just staying ready. Get in against Purdue, guarding John Octius, who is a freak athlete. Mm-hmm. And I see Matt Painter, the second I sub in, change the play. Whatever they were running, when I subbed in, he changed it. So I'm saying, hey, oh, this is coming to me. And you better believe I'm going to try to blow this up, whatever it is. And he knew I'd try to over-pursue whatever's going on, and he backdoored me. And John Octius dunks it. And minute and a half later, I get subbed out. And that was it. And I went back to my phone after the game. And that's the thing. Like, and I talked to Myers about this before too, you know, when I had him on my podcast, is, hey, how do you deal with that? Because if you want to pull back the curtain and see the good, you're exposing yourself to the bad too. So you either need to be taking everything, just surface level, whatever, it's in one ear, out the other ear. Or you need to shut it off. Mm-hmm. And if you think you're a person that is going to take that kind of stuff personal, like after I got backdoored, I went to Twitter and I checked my mentions. Like literally I didn't search my name. They were tweeting at me. And you don't deserve a jersey. Jeez. You name it. And at that point, like I was already beaten up by the fact that I felt like I'd worked my way back in the rotation, and now a back door means I'm out of it again. But yeah, man, I think two of these players, they want to experience that. When you win a Big Ten championship, you want to feel the love.
Yeah.
Right. And I think it's something where, yeah, you expose yourself, you open yourself up to that. And then heaven forbid you lose in the Sweet 16, and the exact thing that you're going to kind of feed yourself, feed your ego a little bit, is the same thing that can kill it.
Yep.
So it's I don't know, if I were to do it again, I think we'd make, it's funny, I always reference my freshman year. We had this rut in 2012, 2013. We were 7 seed, but we lost, yep, I don't know, whatever it was, like 7 of 9 games in Big Ten play. And, you know, we had guys on our team going back at fans, not just reading it, but going back at fans. And Gross was like, that's enough. Like Twitter, we're banning it. No one can go on Twitter. You can't tweet anything.
I remember that, man.
We won six straight. Yeah. And that was the game. It was the game before Indiana. And we ended up beating them number one. I'm not saying we won because of a Twitter ban, but I think it did. We blocked out everything else and could just focus on what was, you know, what was right there in front of us and not getting pulled into, man, this guy from Centralia, Illinois hates my guts right now. You know, it's hard because that's the thing. If Brandon Paul walks the streets, that same guy is probably getting a picture with him.
Yep.
That's just how it goes. And I think that was hard for a lot of players to deal with and understand that. So yeah, man, to answer your question, the long winded way that I always do, they read it. This team seems to be a little bit more distant from it, but shoot, they might read it too. There's a lot of good stuff for them to read this year. Yeah. So
I think they opened it up after wins. That seems to be the case. I see Curbelo after wins, which, hey, why not? Why wouldn't you, right? Enjoy this. And especially in this year, right, where you don't get that interaction. And, boy, you could tell, Mike, they were feeding off that energy of the crowd. And you mentioned, I think Io and Kofi played just fine. And I think they elevate their game in front of a crowd. But Curbelo, I thought the first night against Rutgers, was trying to do a little bit too much and impress people. Because I was talking with some fans, and they were like, I can't wait to see Curbelo live. But boy, those last two games. It's amazing. Like 2 months ago, we're sitting there, who's the third guy? Right? And now I think...
Clear as day.
We found the third guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Curbelo specifically, I think I tweeted out after the game, but he played about 80 minutes in that tournament. And had 5 turnovers and handling the ball a lot, coming off a lot of ball screens, seeing a lot of pressure. And that's what's so impressive about him is we all knew he was the type of guy to up his play when you have people in the stands and when the stakes are high. And but just to see his maturity and I was probably even just more impressed with the hustle plays he made. The one to really seal it against Iowa, where he dives on it, throws it up to Io. Luka doesn't want to foul and, you know, basically seals the game. And the free throws, his ability to step up there. I'm shocked. I think he's still at 74% somehow. I like almost want to go back and I'm like, are the statisticians getting this right? Because to me, it feels like he hasn't missed one in a long time.
74%. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like, doesn't it feel like he's just stepped up there the last 10 games and hasn't missed them. And I never thought he was below 60% at all in the season. So it's kind of weird to think about, but with him, I think what was really cool about this week was people on the national stage got to see what we've been seeing all season. And I've been telling people about Andre Curbelo. Okay. He's a freshman. I would go, dude, watch this kid. Because I'm telling you the way that he plays. And I'm not saying he's a top 10 draft pick this year. I'm not. But you can't deny the fact that the way he plays is something that does not come around often in college basketball. It just doesn't. Like, it's so funny. And I think you can say it's a lazy comparison to compare him to Steve Nash. But if you go back and watch Steve Nash highlights, I was just watching him yesterday. The first thing that comes to my mind, like,
you're such a geek. I love it.
It's just like, those are the passes that Andre Curbelo makes.
Yeah.
The probing underneath the basket to keep the play alive and wait for the perfect time to make, like, there are some really good point guards in college basketball over the years. And I try to take off my orange and blue shades. Mm-hmm. I try to be as subjective as possible, but I had plenty of other people that have no affiliation with the University of Illinois. My high school coach texted me and he said, hey, Curbelo is my favorite player to watch in America. I said, and honestly, that's not speaking in hyperbole. Like, that's what he does. There's a nuance to his game, but like, there's this fundamental aspect to it, but there's this simplicity to it, mm-hmm. but there's this complexity to it. And he's just very, I don't know. He's just a great case study where you're just like, man, this guy will make a pass that I haven't seen all year from anybody in college basketball. Yep. And then he'll also, in a big moment, just dribble off a screen, turn and look and kick it to DeMonte and not complicate things at all. And I think that's something for him. Like, I believe that Andre Curbelo is an NBA player. And I'm not sure that that's like a crazy hot take at this point. I think he's proved a lot of different things at that stage. Do I think he's gone after next year? No. But I think what he's been able to do is if he can improve, and I say improve his outside shot, I know he has it. Like, he has it. It's not improving your shot. It's improving your confidence in which you shoot it with. And that's a big thing. I've had plenty of teammates over the years that you get in your own head when you have guys not guarding you.
Yep.
You know, laying off you from the arc. And you can see from the free throw line, he has the stroke. I mean, it's not like sometimes you have the guys that are good three-point shooters that aren't good free throw shooters, like the Bruce Bowens of the world. I go back and if you look at Bruce Bowen's stats from, and now we're really, I'm not going to take this off the rails, I'm talking about Bruce Bowen, but Bruce Bowen was about like a 42% three-point shooter in his career. And then you look and he shot like 48% from the free throw line in one of his years. I think he was like low 60s for his career. For whatever reason, like he couldn't, but the opposite is always true. Like if you're a good free throw shooter, you can step out. Mm-hmm. Like you, the rotation's good. You know, the follow through is good. And I think he has that. And you think next year, if he shoots 34% from three next year, we're all looking at it like, man, look at the improvement he's made. Whereas like we hold Adam Miller to a different standard. Mm-hmm. Adam Miller shoots 34% from three and we're all up in arms. Yep. Because we think he should just be a 40% plus dead eye shooter as he starts shooting at a line that's almost 3 feet back than his high school one. So I can go on and on about Andre Curbelo, but awesome. I'm excited to see what he does at this on the biggest stage.
I mean, he's obviously not the shooter of Trae Young, but he reminds me of him as a passer and distributor. It's unbelievable. All right, I wrote last week, Mike, about Kofi Coburn because Io DeSumo deserves all the praise in the world, but it's obvious the last 2 years they've had a good record when Kofi Coburn is there. He's changed how they play, and I dove into the numbers, and before he arrived, the 2 years with Brad Underwood, they were 6% worse from two than their opponents. Now, this year, they're 10% better from two. So they go into this bracket, and I know Loyola Chicago is there, and Georgia Tech is there, and Cade Cunningham and Oklahoma State, but oh yeah, Keon Johnson and Tennessee are pretty good too. There's some talented teams, right? But they all got to match up with that guy. To me, he is the Illini's, you know, when you play them, you're worried about Io, you're worried about Curbelo, but Kofi's like the matchup problem. So I know they could lose in the second round or the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, but man, a team's got to match up with Kofi. And he's just the ultimate X factor for him.
I 100%. You're spot on. I agree with that. I think the really cool part about this team is that each piece elevates the other piece. And when I say that, Kofi is such a dominant force inside that people have to help. And when they do help, now you're kicking it out. You know, it may not be Kofi kicking it out to shooters, although he did, I believe it was the Iowa game, he kicked it out to Io for a three, which got me on my seat. But just the gravity and the attention that you have to keep on Kofi and the way he wears down the opposing bigs, like those bigs have to fight every possession against him just for positioning, and then let alone the rebound, and let alone just making sure you don't foul him, or if you do foul him, you may get away with it anyways. But I think for a lot of these, for Kofi specifically, you can go down the list. Yeah, not a lot of college basketball teams have an Io DeSumo. Not a lot of college basketball teams have an Andre Curbelo. You have players that maybe can do some of the things that Curbelo does or Io does, but I'm not sure there's another Kofi Coburn in college basketball. And when I say that, yeah, there's other big men. Yeah, there's other guys that shoot 60%+ from the field. I know he's closer to 70, but it's the way in which, if you go back and I'm sure you have, like you go back and watch just like the Big Ten tournament montage and some of the catches he made off some just great passes. And I think specifically the Rutgers, you know, when Andre Curbelo was kind of stuck and Kofi didn't really have position and Curbelo kind of threw him open, like his body was turned the completely other way and he had to go and turn and have enough dexterity to grab it, but also like softly grab it and not do the bobble to have your defender catch up as you're bobbling it. Like he caught it and went right back up with it. And I think he has, you know, and this is going to be the question mark, you know, if he comes back next year or whatever, but you know, I think what Andre Curbelo has done, and Io too, Io's been so improved off of ball screens. Curbelo obviously is just a wizard off of ball screens. But what they've done for him, anyone can come down and just throw it into the post for him. But are you putting him in advantageous positions to not draw offensive fouls, to not, you know, take bad shots, to take him out of rebounding position, to get an over the back, or get, you know, or just side check somebody and get called for a foul? Like, all those stuff are work together. Like, I think Kofi's a better player because Io and Curbelo are on the team. I think Io and Curbelo are better players because Kofi's on the team. And that's what's really cool about having a really, really great team with pieces that truly, I'm just thinking, if I were to just put my coaching hat on, man, how would I guard Illinois? Like, what would you do? Like, do you double? Because if you double, I still think Kofi has an advantage.
Right.
I've said it before. Like, if he has two guys on him down there and is somewhere around the basket, it's not a bad shot if he shoots it. You start getting three, four. Like, if you get three, four guys on you, now the passes out are a little more clean. If you just have two guys on you and maybe guys zone up, like, that's when you're like, he may have to thread a needle or two. But I don't know. I just look at the way that they've been able to surround him with players that, you know, that elevate his game, to put him in positions to be successful, to make a point of it in certain points of the game and say, we're going to Kofi, period. And they made a point of that. It felt like almost in every game in the Big Ten tournament. It was like, we're starting off this game, we're going into Kofi. I don't know what the number is, but I think Grandison had the and one against Rutgers, but I think the other two games was like, start off with a Kofi dunk or just a Kofi layup. Like, and it's all predicated on penetration. And when you penetrate, like, these guys are, you know, you got Adam Miller and Damonte Williams out there at times, and these guys are a little hesitant to help off those guys. So it creates lanes, and it all opens it up for everybody. So I think Kofi is, it's crazy to say that he's underrated.
Yeah.
But I think he is. Like, it's, you know, and his free throw shooting is going to be the biggest, I think the biggest thing for this team going into March. But shoot, he hit some big ones in overtime. Yeah. In a big moment, I think that's gonna bode well for him going forward.
Yeah, what he did with Garza, the whole Garza to 1 point per shot. You just think about, if you get that far, right? Like, Drew Timmy, I like Illinois' matchup. If Michigan, you get them again, like, I like that matchup. It's amazing. There's not like a matchup I'm scared of with Kofi unless he gets into foul trouble. It's like him taking himself out of the game that would concern me. All right, Mike, what did you think of Illinois' draw in this bracket? We got Houston the 2, the 3 is West Virginia. I thought West Virginia would be the 4 and Oklahoma State would be the 3, but Oklahoma State's the 4, Tennessee the 5, Loyola, Chicago, and Georgia Tech that 8-9 game.
Well, I'll start off by saying I've heard a lot of, you see a lot of chatter, Illinois got a tough draw, Oklahoma State's a 4, and I think I said it yesterday, I think it's a tough draw for Oklahoma State.
Agreed.
Well, like a much tougher draw. And I think what happens as fans, for the fans that are listening to this, and I think we're all guilty of it at times, is we're not used to viewing our path as a one seed. Like, we're just not used to it. Yeah. So what happens is you look at these brackets thinking that this is just your run-of-the-mill Illinois team. Like, man, that Oklahoma State team's good. Man, maybe they get West Virginia and they, it's like, we're Illinois. Did you see the year that – have you seen the year that we had? Did you see how we played in the Big Ten tournament? I mean, you should have the utmost confidence, and it's what makes being a fan of a team like this so cool, is you can take a little bit of comfort knowing that it doesn't matter the matchup. And I don't say that saying like, oh, it doesn't matter the game, we'll win it. No, it doesn't matter. We have pieces that are tough matchups for anybody, like anybody in the country. And, I look at that first game. I mean, you look at – Drexel specifically, they're a very slow it down, grind it up. Like, that's almost the, you know, that's almost the story for, you know, specifically for if Loyola advances too, yep, you're seeing another team like that. Like the thing with Drexel is you know, if you dive into it, I mean, I think they're 340th in the country in tempo. Like, they slow it down, you know, they shoot the three pretty well, you know, they finish around the rim, but that's the Colonial is, that's kind of that league. They tend to slow it down. They don't force turnovers. You know, they don't block shots. And I think they're inside friends. They got JB Bickerstaff's nephew, who's 6'9", but he wants to be on the perimeter. And then you look at Butler, one of their other guys, who's a very, very old school type player. You look at him and you think it's crazy. His last name isn't Paget, and then how he's not playing in like the early 2000s or something in the NBA. That's just kind of his game. And that's just another game where you can go game by game. They don't have anybody that can guard Kofi,
right?
Period. But the one thing Drexel does do well is they're one of the best free throw shooting teams in the country. That semifinal game against Northeastern, a minute in the last minute of the game, they went 10 for 10, ended it. And I'm not saying that I don't think Illinois is going to have any trouble with Drexel. Just trying to give some credit to Drexel for making it this far. But then you look at Loyola, who, yeah, it's the in-state game, and Cameron Crutwig's a third team All-American, which is unbelievable. Yeah. for a guy that coming out of Algonquin Jacobs High School and wasn't the most highly touted guy, but has really found his identity there, and they grinded up too. Braden Norris is another guy he's their point guard. He was actually at Oakland playing in the Horizon before he went over to Loyola, so I got to watch him a lot. And Lucas Williamson, like, they have really tough players, but again, they don't have, like, Crutwig is a big body, but we've seen how that's worked for a lot of teams. He just doesn't really have the height, and I think you could still go to Kofi there. And then you get to Oklahoma State, right? And I think Oklahoma State is kind of one of those teams that, you know, defensively they're right up there. They're top 25 in the country. They don't take care of the ball at a high level whatsoever. You know, they don't shoot the three particularly well. They want to play up tempo, but I think that feeds into Illinois, to Illinois' game plan. I think all these games that you've seen that Illinois lost, the 66-63s against Maryland, and it's those grinded up where you're having to rely on free throw shooting and outside shooting, and maybe they've taken Kofi away or he's been in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think as you go through, I'm not high on Houston. I shouldn't say I'm not high on Houston. I'm not high on Houston as a two seed.
Right.
And I think that's a good, I want to make that distinction. I think if you're a five seed that has to see Houston in the second round as a four seed, that's a whole different story. But if I'm Illinois and Houston ends up making it to the Elite Eight and Illinois does too, I love that matchup.
Right.
Because once again, that's a team that does not have anybody. Quentin Grimes is a great player. I think he was the American Player of the Year. But they don't have anyone that can guard Kofi. And I think that's going to be the theme as you go through this, that, you know, anyone that has won an NCAA tournament, you have some sort of outlier like that. You know, a guy that you can go to every game, you have the advantage. And I think, shoot, you could say it in three different ways. You could say it with Kofi. You could say it with Io, like a National Player of the Year type guy. And I don't think anybody in college basketball has an Andre Curbelo coming off the bench. And all of that bodes well for Illinois. And it's so funny to see that and just be like, man, how many times have we been sitting there as Illinois fans and said, what if we had Kofi Coburn, like a Kofi Coburn and Iowa, like they're here and they're a one seed and they're,
for
you know,
me,
you're on the,
for me, it was watching those Beeline Michigan teams, man. It's like,
right.
Why can't they find a Trey Burke? Like, why can't they find that like under the radar guard who just goes and gets buckets. And then they find the Stauskas kid, who's a good four star, sticks around for a couple years, and DJ Will, like those are the teams. And now, yeah, you are.
Imagine how many college teams are saying that about Illinois.
Right.
Like where are they getting this Curbelo kid from? Which I know Curbelo was a top 100 guy, but you know, I'm sure a lot of schools, like, you know, there's probably schools that didn't offer him, mm-hmm. that are like, wish we got that guy.
Wish I didn't care about like 6'1" as much.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, he goes in, absolutely crams him on the fast break. And I've heard people talking out of Ubbin that are like, he's dunking on people in traffic. Like he is. And when I first heard that, I'm like, really? And then you see his explosiveness, and he's long, and he has just a knack for the ball. And that's, there's certain things where, even just thinking about his NBA prospects, and you and I have talked about this before, there's a reason Kendrick Nunn's in the NBA. It's not because he scored 25 a game at Oakland. That's a part of it. But Kendrick Nunn showed that he is fantastic in ball screens.
Mm-hmm.
And Curbelo's the same way. I'm not sure anybody is better in college basketball coming off of ball screens. and reading it the way he does it, getting his guy to run into the screen every single time, being patient. Because the one thing that I think frustrates big men the most is a guard that's not willing to wait. And when the guard doesn't wait, the big men are running to the bench because they just picked up their second foul with 13:01 left because they didn't want to wait on a screen. Yeah. And it may not have been illegal, but they had to move to try to screen because you wanted to leave early. And that's something that has been so impressive with Io and with Andre. And even in the moments that Trent, who hasn't come off of many ball screens, you see him do it in the Michigan game. You see him coming off of a few now, even in the Big Ten tournament. And he's patient. Like, he comes off of it. And it's definitely something that they rep. But everybody reps it. And not everyone does it. And I'll even say, just while we're on the topic, go back to the Michigan game. And you think about their game plan of icing these sideline ball screens. And if you go back and pull the tape on Maryland, Michigan in the Big Ten tournament, all you hear Mark Turgeon saying is down it, down. It's the same thing as ice. All he was yelling the entire game is down it. And they still couldn't do it. They still couldn't quite get up there and get around the screen. Like, teams want to do it. You could say, mm-hmm. Oh, the book's out on Michigan. Yeah, but you still have to go out there and do it.
Right.
And that's why Illinois, I think, is a cut above the rest, is because they have the talent. And then the execution piece, they get it. They do it. And they do it at a high level. And I think that's kind of what you want on your team. Yeah. Going into March and early April.
Well, before I let you go, Mike, they've won 14 of 15. And against, I mean, what, six straight NCAA tournaments here, five straight wins over KenPom top 10 teams. It's ridiculous, this current runner. Six straight wins over KenPom top 10 teams, I believe. All right, and then so I think both of us would have them in the Final Four, right?
Yeah.
But I'm trying to add, like, what would be the recipe for them to not make it there? I think the number one thing is Kofi foul trouble, right?
Yeah, I think that's number one. And I think number two, and because Kofi foul trouble, you know, it's you're relying heavily upon Georgie, who I think is great in spurts. But the second thing that I would worry about, and it's kind of what brought Ohio State back into the game, is what Ohio State ended up doing was, okay, let's say, yeah, I know this is a podcast. I'm glad there's video. So if people check that out on video, this will make a lot more sense. But let's say Io DeSumo is coming off a ball screen on the left wing and Kofi Coburn is setting it. What Ohio State ended up doing, and they made the adjustment in the first half or at halftime, which I thought was a fantastic decision on Chris Holtman's part, is you have the guy on the back action. So if you're coming off, there's a guy in the ball side corner with you as you're coming off a ball screen. And that guy is going to tag Kofi. He's going to be in between, making sure Kofi. But the other two guys on the other side, because Illinois loves to interchange, they'll do some pin downs and screens. And what Ohio State did was zone up. They just zoned up on the backside, brought it in, and they're going to force you to make that skip pass. That's the pass that they want you to make. They don't want you hitting Kofi on the roll. So they kept jumbling it up inside, and I think it threw Illinois off a little bit. Like, they weren't, because initially, like, all they were thinking was, I get this ball screen, Kofi's going to roll, he's going to be a big target, and I'm going to hit him. And I thought there was like a 6 to 8 minute stretch in the second half the other day where they were second guessing, like, oh man, it's really not there. So what do we do next? And I think that's just when you trust, hey, keep running offense, get them moving side to side. If you don't get that initial ball screen, maybe you get a throwback to the ball side corner and Kofi's in position to turn and face, and those two guys on the weak side can't come all the way over, or else you can actually hit a skip pass with even more, with even more open guys. So trusting the fact that, hey, that first pick and roll might not be there, and that's fine. Like, let's get into it. Let's dribble over a handoff to Trent and maybe, or Curbelo. And then now Kofi run up and set another one. Like, force them to continue to have to stay on alert, because I thought at times in the late second half, they got a little stagnant when they made that adjustment. And then I thought, you know, they hoisted a couple at the end, a couple tough shots. It ended up being, I mean, of course, Io hits the big one to put him up six, but he missed three after that.
Right, it's hard to criticize him, Mike, but those were – he settled. Like, he settled for some really tough – long shots there.
Yeah, and that's I think what Io realizes right now, and everybody has that shot where, like, I'm gonna get to my spot. And he knows that when he does this where he is facing the sideline and turns and rotates and can get off a shot, he knows he can get that whenever. And I think that's good, and it can be bad in situations like that where he's like, if I need to go get a shot, he knows he can get it off. Like, it's not a truly looking for what the defense is doing. And I say, I mean, we're nitpicking, right? I mean, the guy has been a USA Today National Player of the Year. And I think, but the cool thing is that they already saw that. Like, they saw that, and I'm sure Underwood, Gentry, whoever is going into film, hey, next time we see these guys zoning up on the backside, hey, maybe this is the look we want to give. And I'm sure they've seen it earlier in the year, but it's always good for a refresher, especially heading into the tournament, being like, man, there's things we can get even better at as a one seed. So the matchup specifically, like, if we're talking actual teams, you know, if you quite honestly, if you get to a Final Four and Ohio State meets you there, you could go one or two ways with that. You could say, yeah, there's familiarity, we've beaten them before, but yeah, this is a team that also beat you and has proved to keep it close against you, and you kind of stole one in Columbus.
They almost swept you, right? Like, yeah, in three games.
Right. Close to a sweep. And then you look at Baylor. Like, I think Baylor, who's kind of hit a slide. I mean, in Baylor's, you know, relative to Baylor, kind of hit a slide since they've come back from the COVID pause. Do I think, you know, they may be right around the same team that they were in November or in early December. And the good thing for Illinois is they're not the team that they were early in December. They're a lot better. So I think, you know, those types of matchups. And then, you know, if you do make it all the way to the championship and Gonzaga's on the other side, roll the ball out and let's play. I mean, at this point, you got talent all over the floor. Your game plan, just as much as people want a game plan for Illinois, and Illinois ends up just coming out victorious because they have better players, they execute better. It's the same thing with Gonzaga. So it's just a lay it all out there. In a game of small differences are the game. I know I've said it before, like, it's on a whole nother level here in March and early April. But Jeremy, man,
it's here.
It is. We've been talking about it all year, and everybody's been theorizing about this team and what it's going to look like. Oh my God. They lost Ohio State and Maryland. Sky is falling, and nope. This is a team that was only going to get better, and we're here is an understatement.
What's your setup, man? Like, what's Thursday, Friday look like for you?
Oh my gosh, probably like the rest of the world, where you're trying to work. luckily, I have a company that understands that. That's probably also going to be watching the NCAA tournament. It's like five or six of us in my company. So, but yeah, man, I'm debating. It's like, if they end up going to a Final Four or national championship and I end up staying here in Austin and watching on my TV, I'm not sure I'll be able to live with myself.
Right.
I may, and that's the thing. If I may or may not have a flight to Indy already that I can just change with flight credit. Like, I'm not saying that to try to get ahead of myself, but I'm just saying, like, rates will be a little bit cheaper. I can change it. Like, our TBT, you know, we have a certain regional that it's looking like we're going to be in, that I can maybe move that over for flight credit. So, yeah, man, my setup is going to be computer, one game. I might pull the other TV out for another game, and then Illini get the big screen.
That's right. Well, Mike, always appreciate it, and enjoy the first couple rounds of the NCAA tournament. We'll catch up at some point during this run, because I do think it's going to be a pretty extended run here. Always appreciate it, Mike.
Sounds good, man.
Great stuff as always from Michael Tulip. He is the goods, and he did a great job in correcting me after we signed off on this, because I was just assuming it was a normal Thursday, Friday NCAA tournament. Of course it is not. I am so caught in my Illini bubble right now covering this team that I really didn't even pay attention to all of this, which I should be. But we have Friday, Saturday first round games, Sunday, Monday round of 32. Then the Sweet 16 is going to be on March 27th and 28th, that's Saturday and Sunday, and the Elite Eight is the following Monday and Tuesday. So a little bit different schedule this year, as they make sure they go through all the quarantine testing, all of that this year. But Friday, Saturday, first round. So thanks to Mike for telling me that afterwards, just so I have that clear towards the end of this podcast. The first four is Thursday night. You got Norfolk State and App State, 16 seeds. Wichita State and Drake, the 11 seeds. Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern, 16 seeds. And then, of course, the primetime game is Michigan State against UCLA in that 11 seed. Thank you to Michael Tua for hopping on and giving us a great analysis and good stories as well. If you don't already, subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget, through Thursday night, you can get 2 months of Illini Inquirer VIP access for just $1. So if you haven't tried us out yet, what a great time to do it. It's March Madness, people. Sign up now. We got spring football going on, a lot in recruiting. You can get Derek Piper's latest basketball recruiting buzz, and there's a lot of buzz going on right now, and a lot going on with football recruiting as well, as we're expecting official visits to start in June, and Illinois is making some big pushes, especially for some in-state prospects. We'll have the latest on that. So sign up now, 2 months, $1. If you don't like it, you can cancel and move on, but why not give it a try right now in the middle of the most important time of the year, really, for Illini athletics. Thank you for listening today. Everybody have a great day. Take care of each other. We'll talk to you next time on the Illini Inquirer podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.